Hello, this is Lori Clausen coming to you today with another episode of Making Sense of Social Media. This is a podcast intended for small business owners, new entrepreneurs, or maybe experienced entrepreneurs, startups, anybody that is out there trying to use organic content marketing to help grow and scale their businesses. So today we have an incredible guest. His name is Marcus Schaller. I can't wait for you to meet him. He has so much experience, even more than I do, very honestly. I've been in business 13 years and he's been like 20 plus. So I'm so excited for the tips and tidbits and advice that he's going to bring to us today. Welcome, Marcus. Hello, Marcus, and welcome to the Making Sense of Social Media podcast. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to the audience and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you today. In a nutshell, I've been involved in marketing to some degree or another for a little over 20 years. Most of that time has been spent in either consulting or coaching with everything from like entrepreneurs and solopreneurs, very small businesses, and more recently working with like some slightly larger SaaS companies, you know, maybe 500-600 employees, and
wow,
focusing on
cool.
Things like, yeah, like, you know, bigger. I mean, again, you think about big companies are really like, you know, maybe 10,000 people, whatever. So,
yeah.
But, you know, things about messaging strategy, copywriting, and in all of that time, coaching has been a big part of what I do with clients. But I've now recently, I'm focusing 100% on transitioning to coaching specifically, not related to like, you know, then writing copy for somebody or whatever.
Right.
So
yeah.
I'm in a bit of this interesting transition in my own career, which I'm very excited about. So,
well, I love that for you. And I think that's why you and I resonate so much with each other, because I'm doing the exact same thing. So very cool. Well, I'm really excited to talk about content marketing with you today. So I have a bunch of questions for you and I'm just going to dive on in if you're ready.
Let's do it.
Amazing. All right. So question number one, what are the main goals of creating and distributing content on your social media platforms?
Okay. So, you know, one thing to think about is that to always think about it from the point of view of what's the point of content to begin with, right? So I don't know if you remember this, but, you know, back in the day before it was called content marketing, and Seth Godin wrote a book called Permission Marketing, and it was really kind of the beginning of content online, right? You had newsletters and things like that. And the whole idea was, instead of advertising to people or only advertising or only doing cold calling, whatever, can you create resources, information that's useful, that helps them solve a problem? And in doing so, you'll create a relationship with them. You'll start providing value and then open the door to a conversation that, of course, can hopefully lead to a sale or them becoming a client. So I always start from that position, right? So what is ultimately the goal, whether it's on social media, like technically social media, or whether it's something like, you know, even a newsletter is not like not specifically social media, but they're all interrelated, right?
Absolutely.
And I kind of look at it from that angle. Like, what can you create? The goal is like, you know, can we create something that is really useful? And that gets harder, right? Because now there's so much content out there, and don't even get me started about ChatGPT and all that stuff, right? We could talk about that too, but there's no shortage of content now, right? So now the challenge isn't about even like, how do we create useful content? It's how do we create something that breaks through a lot of the noise that we're seeing?
Yeah. Gets them to stop scrolling and go, oh, I like this one. This means something to me.
Yeah. And there's, you know, we could talk more about specifically how to do that. I don't want to jump too far ahead, but, you know, one of the goals is really like, you know, if you're going to create something useful for people, you have to start with thinking about a person, right? Because there's no such thing as
people.
There's no such thing as an audience. There's people, you know, a person, and you think about who is that person? Why would they care about this information? What is that going to do for them? Why, you know, kind of an idea of it, like what's on their whiteboard? What is the problem they're dealing with? And if you can match to that, but that involves really being very specific, which gets into a lot of the, you know, the tactical stuff too. So,
right. Oh, that's such an excellent answer. I love it. All right. So how do you measure the effectiveness and impact of your social media content? Do you have some key metrics or tools that you use to determine effectiveness?
Yes, I think I'll start with how I don't determine effectiveness, which is with the vanity metrics, right? I look at it
Right.
like I'm like everybody else. I love it when people like my links or my, I mean, my LinkedIn posts and my, I love
Yeah.
it, right? I'm not going to say I don't care about that, but that's not to me. It is a means maybe to an end. It helps boost it a little bit. It helps expand the reach, which is of course useful, but that by
Right.
itself is not a useful metric. Other than for my ego, right? So, which may be
Right.
useful just because
Yeah.
it keeps you going, right? If somebody's paying attention, maybe that's something good, right?
Totally.
I think, you know, with the metrics thing, I can't say that I have a specific metric or measurement that a formula that I go by. Certainly, the best case scenario is somebody listens to my podcast or somebody reads my blog or somebody sees me on a podcast like this and they reach out. That's like the win.
Right.
Right, you know, they
Totally.
want to start a conversation. There's steps in between. There's like, you know, are they even subscribing to your podcast? Are you building that relationship slowly? So subscriptions could be a metric, right?
Right.
Again, leading to the ultimate goal of a conversation, at least in my opinion. And ultimately, too, there's kind of a hidden goal or a metric that's not necessarily something that you can measure, which I guess doesn't make sense if I say metric, but if I have on my website lots of content that I've put a lot of time and energy into creating that I feel is useful for a specific audience,
Right.
if I have that content on YouTube, if I have that on a podcast, if I put that on LinkedIn, if somebody comes across my information through some other means, let's say it's a referral or whatever way they see me,
Right.
they don't necessarily just like email me right off the bat. They'll go to my website, maybe. They'll go to my LinkedIn. They'll do a little digging, right? And
For
so
sure.
that content, I put everything on LinkedIn, I put everything on my website. So hopefully they're looking through and they're getting a sense of who I am, how I think, the things that I focus on. So I might not ever be able to truly measure that. I could certainly ask people where they heard about me or anything like that. But I think that's when I think about content marketing, even for a larger company, even for a SaaS company, it's not just, you know, are you getting a lot of reach? Are you getting a lot of traffic? It's is the VP of, you know, the CMO or whoever it is you're trying to sell to, are they finding stuff on your website or on your LinkedIn that is so valuable that it's actually moving them forward toward a conversation? And that's very hard to measure.
Right. It is hard to measure, but it's such an important point is that it truly is all about building those relationships, and that's the entire point of content marketing. So, oh, I love that. So good. All right, next question. What are some best practice tips for creating engaging and relevant content for your target audience? So maybe some of your little tips or tricks or gadgets or what have you. Outside of AI. I mean, unless you want to talk about AI,
Thank
because
you.
I'm a big fan, I gotta
All right,
say.
good.
Yes, I am.
So I'm still getting, well, let's start with AI because I think it's relevant, right? And I don't want to dissuade people from using it. What I will say is realize that writing well, and let's just, you know, most content is written form, even if it's a podcast,
Yes.
even if it's, there's some kind of writing element to it, that at this stage and foreseeably for many years to come, AI and algorithms and machine learning does not have a sense of empathy. It doesn't have a sense of context. It doesn't have a sense. It doesn't have a point of view. It certainly doesn't have your point of view, right?
Correct,
So
yeah.
if I'm seeing a lot of this, I'm sure you are too, where, you know, I'm even seeing this on responses or comments on my LinkedIn posts. You know, they're just obviously somebody copied and pasted my post. It fed over whatever, it just kind of regurgitated a comment that seems like it's relevant and kind of mentions key points, and but there's nothing to it. You could tell it's not human.
Yeah,
To
yeah.
me, that kind of use of any kind of technology is absolutely the wrong way to go. Now, where it can be useful is, let's say you want to write a blog post, but you're not a strong writer, you don't feel confident in it, or maybe you're trying to come up with some ideas. Certainly the tools can help you polish things or outline a brainstorm, whatever. Like, there's a good way to use it. But at the end of the day, remember that you're writing or you're creating content for people. And there's enough robotic content out there that was written by people to begin with, right? There's a lot of
Yeah.
stale, lifeless, uninteresting stuff out there, whether it's written by a bot or whether it's written by a person, doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
It also lacks your own point of view. So if you're building a company from scratch, if you're a coach, if you're a consultant, your greatest asset in creating content is your own point of view, your own experience. What I would say is a best practice is start with you. Start with what you deeply care about. That what you care about is going to translate to the people that you naturally should be working with. So that kind of answers another problem about clients, what kind of clients. But be yourself, be true to yourself. You have a voice, even if you're not a creative person. Everybody's creative, you know, not everybody identifies as creative. You have your own voice. I'd say just know what that is, trust it, refine it, improve it over time, but just like drive a bus through that, basically.
I love that. I'm going to go off. I love this so much, and I'm going to go off script just a little bit here, but something that you said, just tweaked a thought, like as you coach small business owners and maybe new business owners about how to create this type of content and be, you know, produce what they're passionate about, that doesn't, it still sometimes is hard for people who lack self-confidence or self-worth. Like, how do you coach small business owners how to have confidence in what they're doing and like show them that, yes, you can do this. Anybody can do this, but not everybody believes that, even if they're passionate about what they do, right?
Yes. Yeah, that is, I think that is a huge sticking point, whether it's they don't have confidence in their, the value of their own ideas, or where they don't feel confident as a writer or a you know, like technically like writing a post that's readable. And there's, you know, there's a few ways to go at that. One is that, first of all, to be aware of it, right? To admit it to
self-aware ourselves.
Yeah, to self-awareness and be able to say, you know what, this is uncomfortable. And a lot of this will be uncomfortable. Like, you know, even if I'm writing, right? If I'm creating content for a client, I don't know if they're going to like love it or think like, oh, you know, you get it back a draft with all these marks and whatever.
Yeah.
No, that's not great confidence builder. Right? And it's uncomfortable. So that leaning into that discomfort, and I think this applies to every aspect of being a human being and especially business, is being able to lean into that discomfort and really realize that you're not alone in this, that imposter syndrome is quite common, especially when it comes to sharing our opinions or point of view on a social like LinkedIn or being really kind of overt about it, right? The act of putting out a podcast like you're doing is an act of confidence, right? It's shouting to the world that you have something to share.
Yeah.
And not everybody is as comfortable doing that. So I would say be kind to yourself and recognize that you are feeling what you're feeling. A lot of this is emotional. And then it goes back to, even if you look at what you do and you're lacking confidence about its validity or value, what I would not do is look to others or other companies as being the benchmark for how to be. Because you can look at it for like, you know, maybe some good technical tips, right? There's certain things about like when you post is, you know, better times than others, whatever. But don't, if you're not confident about your own voice, don't just mimic the corporate lingo and think that's the right way to do it. Because
or the latest influencer or something.
And especially the latest influencer. and I mean, I'm not an influencer, so let me make that category right there. I'm not putting myself in that in that category, but like even myself, whenever I like when I coach people, it's not about advice. It's about helping. I'm a thinking partner. It's about helping them clarify their own thoughts and ideas and discover their own solutions. Right. So even like as much as I like to give advice in a conversation like this, it's everything you take with a grain of salt, right?
Totally.
It's test everything, always ask questions, and don't take anything for granted. Even the term best practice is something that I've posted my own little rants about that term, you know, because best practice implies that there's no better way to do it. It's just like, I've worked with people that they're like, oh, the best practice is this. And it's kind of like shutting down the conversation, you know,
as she changes her LinkedIn profile.
What's that?
She changes her LinkedIn profile.
Oh no, I'm sorry. See, this is the thing is
no,
too.
I love it.
This is a good point. This is actually brings up a really good point. and this has happened to me actually, not just right now, but recently on LinkedIn. If you express your own truth, right, your own point of view, you will put your foot in your mouth. You will absolutely put your foot in your mouth, and that's okay.
Absolutely.
And
yeah,
you know, it's sometimes whatever. So
it
again,
builds character.
All this is going to build character for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
I want to share a little story. So again, something you said tweaked a memory when you said, you know, if a client returns a blog post that's filled with red marks and change this, change that. I used to have a client that they are a large nursery company. So they, you know, they grow plants and then they sell them to companies like Walmart and Costco and what have you. And one of the very, after they hired me to create their content for them, one of the very first posts I put out had a bunch of plants, of course, because they're a nursery. And sorry, I just find this so hilarious. The CMO at the time wrote me back saying, Lori, green in the world of nurseries, green is not a color. And I was like, pardon? It's plants. How is
yeah. I'm so, yeah, intrigued. I'm intrigued by this. You have me. What?
Well, it was just his train of thought was that nurseries want to see like pinks and oranges and yellows and like, because every plant is green, so therefore it doesn't overly distinguish or set themselves apart, kind of thing. So
yeah,
it just happened to be the very first piece of content that I created for him, and it was like, after, you know, as long as I've been doing this, I was like, my confidence was knocked down a few steps after that, but it all worked out for the best.
I can totally relate to that. And I used to, you know, quite a few years back, I used to be very insecure about asking questions at the beginning of that project. Cause I had this weird, you know, this weird self-esteem thing where I felt like I should like be able to knock it out of the park blind, you know what I mean? And, you know, even for people listening that they're not necessarily doing these kinds of projects for somebody else, where, you know, you can even think of it for yourself. The right's a good, I don't want to say the right starting point, a good possible starting point, right? Is imagine you're your client and ask yourself the questions, figure out like, what are the parameters there, right? So as professionals working with a company, you and I might say, okay, let's have a brief, let's have a discovery call about this project. They should hopefully provide you a brief with all that, but they don't. We know that, right? So, you know,
do we ever?
That, right? You have that discovery call and you ask the questions and you define these kinds of things. You won't get all of them, but you define a lot of these kind of big chunks, right? So that you're not wasting your time going in a direction that's just the total opposite. You can do the same thing for yourself. So if you're trying to figure out, you know, what should I write about, or what do I want my first 10 topics to be? You don't have to start with listing 10 topics. You can ask yourself as if you were a copywriter writing for a client. You say, well, what are the problems that your clients are going, whatever it is, you know? But, you know, that can be a way to kind of get past yourself and worrying about, because ultimately, if you're thinking like, I'm not good enough, my ideas don't matter, your ideas don't have to matter. What you need to do is focus on, what do other people need? If you focus on what other people need, your own sense of like worthiness just doesn't really, it shouldn't have as much of an impact.
Exactly. Oh, that is gold. I love that so much. Yay, Marcus.
Yay, me. I already know by the end of this conversation, my ego is going to be well inflated. So cheers.
Cheers. All right. Next question. How do you balance the quality versus quantity debate that surrounds social media marketing content?
Got it. As you can tell, I have opinions, right?
I love them. They're great.
And I'm not shy about it. It doesn't work very well for past situations where I was in more kind of rigid cultures that don't like opinions. But this is one of those debates that I just have never wrapped my head around and understood why it's a debate. I don't personally think that there is a case for quantity without quality. Again, there is no shortage of content. Right? There's nobody on LinkedIn going, darn it, nobody's posting, right? or podcast fans going, darn it, there's no new shows to explore. Like, there is so much quantity out there. right? Yeah. So the idea, that question, when people, and you're not obviously the first person to ask it, it's like, you know, you see it all over the place, is, well, what would be the opposite of that? Quantity without quality? Like, how would that work? Are you just going to churn? And we're seeing that now, especially with ChatGPT. We're just going to churn it. We're going to do the checklist, blog post, and it's, you know, I mean, my opinion, it is not useful, right? It is not helpful. It is just more words or more videos or more stuff. And so I go back to, like, what is the, for myself, right? And we'll use the example of this new podcast, and I'm going to do a little self, you know, gratuitous self-promotion here.
Yes,
the new podcast I just launched that's related to the coaching. It's just all about the problem solving side of things, right? And it's, I thought about, like, ultimately I want to write a book based on this one. I can't sit down and spend 6 months just writing it. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to do a little bit at a time. And so I committed to, I'm going to post every day. So that post is a podcast. It is a YouTube. It is a blog post. It is a LinkedIn post. It's even on Instagram, even though I don't have any followers on Instagram. Oh. Right? Right?
Oh, dear.
So it lives in all these different places because different people like to consume things in different ways.
Yeah.
So I made that commitment, but I made the commitment knowing that I'm not going to do it unless I can do it well. So every day in the morning, especially, because that's my kind of prime time, I spend a lot of time writing whatever that is, right?
Yeah.
And editing and then recording it. And da, 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 da. And it's easier for me and faster for me because I've done it a lot. So it's, you get into a groove, but it is still a commitment. If I felt that I couldn't keep up with that, I would not do it at that cadence. And, you know, my other podcast that has to do with marketing was a great example. I started that out when I was in between gigs, and I was like, I was leaving an agency and I didn't have anything lined up. Not a great idea, by the way, but, you know, so I had lots of time. So I'm like, I'm just going to do a daily interview podcast. And I interviewed pretty much five people a week and put out a 5 day a week interview podcast starting at 45 minutes. I mean, you want to talk about like you're committing. And then very quickly, I started getting client work again, and I just didn't have the time. So I pulled back on it. I'd rather do the best show I can once a week than do a media, you know. So I'm probably overstating the case, but my perspective is, what is the best quality within reason? You don't want to overthink it, and, you know, you don't want to keep polishing something endlessly. But what is going to really make an impact? And if you can do that every day, great. Maybe small little snippets. That's kind of my thinking. Like, little bits of information right now, I think, are easier for people. So maybe there's some value in a smaller chunk every day than a bigger chunk once a week. But I don't know if that, I'm curious about your thinking on that too, because it is such a prevalent thing in marketing, especially. What are your thoughts about it?
Yeah, I'm very similar as you when I teach and instruct content marketing to small business owners. I often say, if you can be consistent, that's a really big key, but consistency is different for everybody. So whatever, like you said, what you can commit to, if you can commit to once a week, then it's once a week. If it's once a month, then it's once a month. You know, as you follow that trend, then your audience becomes conditioned to expect that once a month great post or video or blog post or whatever it is. But yeah, again, for me, it's about consistency, but you know, not to the degree of burnout. So, cause that's the last thing I want. Cause I've burned out myself when I'm trying to produce content on a daily basis, and it's just not a great idea. And for most people, daily is really, really hard. So,
and one thing I wanted to add to that too, and I think it's an important point, especially for listeners of yours that aren't marketers, or they're not used to the world of, like, you and I kind of like just speak the lingo when we talk to people about this all the time. You know, you can, it's not an either or thing when it comes to quantity sometimes, because you can look at it like, let's say you create, I think a podcast is a great example. I'm such a big proponent of podcasts. And one of the reasons is I love to talk to people like you, right? That's it's a fun thing. So for people like us that are talkers, it's a great thing, right? But, you know, I think it's something that is such an easy to consume channel for people. It's a great format for people because they can listen to it when they're driving and while they're washing dishes. It's just a nice thing, right? But yeah, what's really cool about podcasts is that you can turn it into a whole lot of other stuff. I just mentioned before, I have a LinkedIn post in the blog, but you know, so, you know, you could take this interview and if it's, you know, you go like, yeah, Marcus had a couple of good points in between those crazy, you know, those crazy opinions of his, you could, you know, you turn those into little 25 second or minute and a half long YouTube videos. Like there's so much you can do. So it's not like if you feel like you can only really produce one piece of really good long form content a week or a month, that doesn't mean you're limited to that one thing. You can cut that thing up and repurpose it in a lot of different ways that still takes some time, but now you're taking it and you're creating quantity out of something that inherently has quality baked into it.
Right. Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's wonderful. And those are a lot of the things that I teach small business owners, how to take that one piece and, you know, turn it into 10, 15, 20 pieces of, you know, bite-size consumable content. So fantastic. Absolutely. I love it. Awesome. Go Marcus.
Again. I know. Yes. I think we have an idea of what the title of this episode will be.
Go Marcus.
Go Marcus.
I love it. All right. I have one last question for you today. And that is, how do you leverage the power of storytelling and emotion in your social media content? Can you maybe share some examples of successful stories or campaigns you have created or participated in?
Yeah, let's start with emotion. I think, you know, kind of ties back to what we were just talking about. This type of format captures emotion. You and I are having a human conversation. We're having fun doing it. There's emotion to that. Somebody listening, hopefully, is like the fly on the wall and enjoying that in some level, right? So there's an emotional component, again, baked into that. That, for me, when I create something, if I want that, even if it's in writing, I want to convey that to some degree in an authentic way. I don't try to like just, you know, make something jazzy and like, you know, try to create fake emotion, whatever. So that part I think is really important because ultimately anything you're doing there, even if you're doing like B2B technology sales or something like, you know, a product, there's always an emotional component to selling something, right? So it's not just features and benefits. There's like, why does this matter to somebody? And it's, again, an emotional decision. Even people will tell you B2B isn't there. It's absolutely right. It just has to be backed up with a lot of logic too. So as far as storytelling, before we hit record, you and I were talking a little bit about story brand and you know, that has been that format for people that aren't familiar. Story brand is like one approach to basically taking your whatever would be your marketing messaging and framing it from a narrative perspective or framework. So it's like basically there's a character, you know, the hero of the story is not you, it's the customer, like little things like that. And I won't, you know, get into the details of all of it, but that kind of thing I've absolutely has influenced as much as possible everything I'm doing as far as messaging and how I'm telling the story. Lately, I've realized that there's still a lot of learning I have ahead of me on that. And, you know, really being able to tell stories in a way that, you know, like even in a post to be able to share, like a lot of my favorite business books are books by journalists who are really good at basically capturing a principle and telling it in the story of a historical figure or something. And that's really intriguing for people. So I think it's very important. I personally still have a long way to go to developing that skill. And, but I think even this, again, going back to a podcast or whatever this is, like, you know, I'm telling you a story about something, right? And that story, it's a very natural thing. So we don't necessarily have to overthink it, but there is nuance to it. And there's a lot of like little tiny details that really can make a big difference.
I love what you just said though, to not overthink it, because then it becomes more of a chore, and I personally feel storytelling needs to just kind of flow, and the more you do it, it's like a muscle, right? The more you use it, the stronger it becomes. So.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know if you've come across this, especially a couple of years ago, I guess when the pandemic was really at the height of what pandemics do. a lot of people were on LinkedIn that hadn't been before. And there was this, have you heard the term, have you heard the term broetry? Does that, do you know that term?
No, that's a new one.
All right. So, you'd see like influencers or people that wanted to be influencers, particularly on LinkedIn. This is where I spend most of my time social media wise. I don't use Facebook really, but, it would be like, usually a dude, and I'm a dude, so it's cool to be a dude, whatever. But like, it was usually a dude, and it was like kind of like a heartfelt story, you know what I mean? Like, you know, back in the day, you know, let me tell you why my dad's my best friend. You know, it's like, it's just stuff that was like, you know, again, it's a taste thing, but it was stuff that was like very kind of intentional. Like, it wasn't, I'm not saying it wasn't even authentic, I'm sure they had a dad, right? But there was this kind of like, you know, the best marketing, you know, lesson I ever learned was from my, you know, Chihuahua or something like that, you know, that can go a little bit like, if your story is something like, hey, let me tell you about the time I got my first client. Like, that's a story, right? Mm-hmm. If the story is me looking around my office going, I wonder if I can use my ceiling fan as a metaphor for relationships, you know, what I learned from my ceiling fan about building relationships, that's when storytelling can feel a little contrived. So everybody, we all have to do within our own kind of tastes and whatever, but that would be one thing I would see, be like, you know, be careful not to use it as too heavy or too blunt of an instrument, because it can come very, very insincere and disingenuous.
Yeah. And then that gets dangerous for sure. Broetry. That's broetry. Maybe because I'm not a bro. Maybe I didn't see.
Yes. And I'm sure as a, you know, as I'm not a bro guy, I was not allowed into the cool bro clique, but I'm sure I'm guilty of it too, to some degree. Right. I might've shared something that I thought was authentic that came off as broetry. But
as long as you didn't use your ceiling fan, then I'm sure it was okay.
No. It was funny, because I can be kind of you know, tongue in cheek about stuff. Obviously, a few months ago, we got a new puppy, and my puppy finally learned how to go up and down the stairs. And I just was in a really snarky mood one Sunday, and I decided to post the video of it. And it started out with like, you know, 10 marketing lessons I learned from my puppy learning how to go up and down stairs. And of course, I put just a joke, you know, but he's very cute here. Enjoy the video, you know.
Exactly.
If you're real authentic, you will put your foot in your mouth. It will happen. So be warned.
100%.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Well, Marcus, I have enjoyed this so very much. Thank you for being a part of this podcast experience. And I will make sure that all of the listeners know exactly where to find you and to listen to your podcasts. And it's just been a real, real pleasure and a lot of fun. So thank you so much for being part of Making Sense of Social Media today.
My pleasure. So glad to be here.